भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय Okay, so today we're going to look at the final chapter 16 of Canto 8, the Payabrata process of worship. Kashyapa is now going to give further instructions to a deity to fulfill the request of a deity that he instruct her in the perfect method of worship of the Supreme Personality of the Godhead, in devotional service, by which the Lord may very soon be pleased with her and save her, along with her sons, from the most dangerous condition they had found themselves in as a result of Bali Maharaj leading the daitas, the demons, to overthrow the demigods from heaven. Sri Kashyapa Muni said, "When I desired offspring, I placed inquiries before Lord Brahma, who is born from a lotus flower. Now, I shall explain to you the same process Lord Brahma instructed me, by which Keshava, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is satisfied." And as we see, we discussed previously, actually, in this text, number 24, purport, this further explanation of devotional service, is that it's the same process that Brahma spoke to him. So the guru does not manufacture a new process to instruct the disciples, as Prabhupada says. The guru receives from the guru an authorized process received by the guru from his guru. This is the system of the cyclic succession. This is the bona fide Vedic system of receiving the process of devotional service by which the Supreme Personality of Godhead is pleased. Therefore, to approach a bona fide guru or spiritual master is essential. So, unless one follows the parampara system, the mantra one receives will be chanted for no purpose. Nowadays, there are so many rascal gurus who manufacture their mantras as a process for material advancement, not spiritual advancement. Still, the mantra cannot be successful if it is manufactured. Mantras in the process of devotional service have special power provided they are received from the authorized person. And, you know, this process of what makes one an authorized guru, what makes an authorized process, and how we are following in the footsteps of Lord Sri Krishna himself and Lord Chaitanya, the Personality of Godhead. Srila Prabhupada spoke that over and over again, especially, you know, to the Indian audiences, to let them know that you know, this is a process we're following. But also, all over the world, he, you know, would say to the Western, you know, the English-speaking world, we have an authorized movement. It is authorized. It is not concocted. It is not anything new. And that's what makes it successful. When you follow the authorized process, it is potent. So that's a good starting point. And so in the bright fortnight of the month of Falguna, February, March, for 12 days, ending with Dwadasi, one should observe the vow of subsisting only on milk and should worship the lotus-eyed Supreme Personality of Godhead with all devotion. And Prabhupada says that worshipping the Supreme Lord Vishnu with devotion means following Archana Marga. Marga is the path, so the path of worship. Worshipping, that the path of worship is to worship Lord Vishnu. Shravanam Kirtanam Vishnu, Smaranam Parasevanam, Archanam Bandhanam Dasyam Sakyam Atmanavedam. One should install the deity of Lord Vishnu or Krishna and worship him nicely by dressing him, decorating him with flower garlands and offering him all kinds of fruit, flowers and cooked food nicely prepared with ghee, sugar and grains. One should also offer a flame, incense and so on while ringing a bell as prescribed. This is called worship of the Lord. Here it is recommended that one observe the vow of subsisting only by drinking milk. This is called payobrata. So, as we generally perform devotional service on a codicil by not eating grains, it is generally recommended that on dwadasi one not consume anything but milk. Payabrata, an archana devotional service to the Supreme Lord, should be performed with a pure devotional attitude, bhakti. Without bhakti, one cannot worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead. If one wants to know the Supreme Personality of Godhead and be directly connected with him, knowing what he wants to eat and how he is satisfied, one must take to the process of bhakti. As recommended here also, bhakti paramayana vita. One should be surcharged with unalloyed devotional service. So, Krishna accepts offerings from those who have bhakti or love, devotion. Bhakti is a process where we worship the Supreme Lord with the purpose of just pleasing the Supreme Lord without any other material motivation for profit or gain or adoration. And the Lord will accept those offerings from those who have purified their heart with love. And love means that they're always thinking of Krishna or Vishnu or his, you know, different Vishnu tattva forms. They're not going here and there to this one and that one, different demigods and or powerful personalities or devoted to any material family member or materially powerful person. They are, you know, love means all one's devotion is exclusively reposed in one person, Krishna. Then he will accept. And so those who are always thinking of Krishna and always devoting their life to understand how to serve him, they will gradually, Krishna will allow them to understand. Otherwise, it's not such a cheap thing. To serve the personality of Godhead takes transcendental, very elevated transcendental intelligence awarded to, by the Lord within the heart. Without that, one will not know how to please the Lord. And one hears from Krishna himself how he likes to be served. So if one wants to serve the person of Godhead, one will ask, well, what would you like? And he tells us how he likes to be served, different types of foods and aarti, items of aarti, incense, flame, ringing the bell, flowers. And we offer those things, not things that we he doesn't want, meat and things in rajas and tamaguna that we may want for our sense gratification. He doesn't accept those things. So with that, bhakti is essential to worship the Lord. There must be a loving attitude, otherwise, without devoting one's life to understanding how to serve God, it's not such a cheap thing that one can understand in 2 minutes. It's a very elevated platform. So one must be devoted to that. So that's the bhakti. And then by the blessings of the Lord, one's efforts will be rewarded. So this is the path. So one cannot just perform this paya brata. That's the point. Here we're hearing the paya brata vow. One may think, oh yes, okay, I've read this in the scriptures and I'll do this as well. Some women may think like that, or the men. I will also do that. That's the point. That if the bhakti is not there, they'll have no understanding what they're doing. They'll not know, even though they read it, they'll actually not know how to do it. And whatever little glimpse they think they have, Krishna may not accept. So that's the point there.
So the objective of this process is to satisfy Supreme Lord.
Yep.
But Aditi is approaching it with some ulterior motive of getting some derive some benefit out of that virtue.
Yeah.
Can that still be classified as
beautiful? So, a deity does have some, she's not approaching this as a pure devotee. And she's admitting that. Therefore, she's asking Kashyapa that, in essence, because I'm not a pure devotee of the Lord, I'm not one of his elevated devotees, more like the demigods who enjoy the heavenly planets with some attachment to God. So then how do I please the Lord? So then Kashyapa, he's recommended a process which pure devotees recommend. And therefore, if she follows that, then although she's not a pure devotee, she's following the path of pure devotional service to the best of her ability. And the process purifies one. So there's that verse from the Nectar Devotion that, when we engage our senses in the service of the Lord, we become free from the upadis, the material identifications and motivations. And, that is called pure devotional service, or, in other words, by following devotional service with our senses, you know, it brings us to the platform of pure devotional service by following. So, Prabhupada gives this example that, you know, therefore our intelligence and ability to perform devotional service may be very limited due to our material conditioning. So he gives the example that, you know, if we're riding a bike, then according, you know, we might be able to go 10 kilometers an hour or something like that. You know, if we're pedaling along. But if we catch a hold of the tram or the back of an old truck, you know, we can go 80 kilometers an hour. Even though our legs, you know, will only go, you know, if we hold on, then, you know, we can go the same speed as the truck or the tram. So the same way, if we hold on to the lotus feet of the process of devotional service as given by the pure devotees, so therefore, you know, that's why it's said that the bona fide process is one you accept from a bona fide guru who has accepted it from the bona fide guru. And what that means is that, you know, Lord Brahma is hanging on to the lotus feet of Krishna, so he's not doing things according to the level of Brahma, he's doing things according to the level of Krishna. And then in disciplic succession, someone's hanging on to the lotus feet of Brahma, who's hanging on to them, so, you know, you imagine one bicycle hanging on to the truck and someone's on another bicycle hanging on, so they're all going at the speed of the truck. Although they're hanging on to someone who can only go 10 kilometres an hour, they're all going at the speed of the truck. So, you know, that's why, otherwise you can't, see. So it's got to link up with Krishna, that's the parent, it must link with Krishna through the parampara system. So she's linking through her husband, who's linking through Brahma, who's linking through Krishna, and therefore she's properly situated, despite the fact that there are limitations in her ability. So that's the importance. And so, you know, people don't understand, you know, that link. You know, the parampara, you know, that's a common thing all over the world. But, you know, such a nice example that Prabhupada gives that, you know, you go at the same speed as Krishna. You know, that's, therefore, we are the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. See, I didn't come here to be a Gangeshwara consciousness. You know, you've not come here to be in Naveen consciousness, and all these other people here are not here to be in such and such consciousness. We're actually trying to be in Krishna. In other words, we're trying to think as Krishna would like us to think. That's called Krishna consciousness. See, what Krishna says, Krishna, when Krishna looks at a tree, he sees, well, there's my material energy, there's the spirit soul, there's my expansion of the super soul. That's Krishna consciousness when Krishna looks at a tree. So when we look at a tree, we shouldn't just look at a tree. We should look how Krishna is looking at it. That's called Krishna consciousness. So so that's the important thing about the parampara, that to have Krishna consciousness, you actually have to connect with Krishna through the parampara. And this is what, despite her personal limitations, it allows her to act properly, despite the fact that there are material considerations. Yeah. So then the process will give a result.
Category of 9 limbs of...
Yeah, archana. You know, if we worship the Lord with particular paraphernalia or offerings in a, according to particular rules and regulations at certain set times and places, and then that is a process of archana. So, yeah. If dirt dug up by a boar is available on the day of the dark moon, one should smear this dirt on his body and then bathe in a flowing river. While bathing, one should chant the following mantra. So, you know, as it says, this Pavibrata is performed for 12 days, which would be from the Pratipat after the Amavasya, so the dark moon. So from the Pratipat after the dark moon up to the Dwadashi, that's the 12 days. So this is like the preparation before doing the Brata. O Mother Earth, you were raised by the Supreme Personality of Godhead in the form of a boar because of your desiring to have a place to stay. O Mother Earth. So this is the mantra. This is the mantra she should chant. Tvam Devi Adivaradi Varahina Arasaya Sanam Ichata Udritashi Namastubhyam Papmaname Pranasaya. O Mother Earth, you are raised by the Supreme Personality of Godhead in the form of a boar because of your desiring to have a place to stay. I pray that you kindly vanquish all the reactions of my sinful life. I offer my respectful obeisances unto you. So, of course, by remembering the personality of Godhead is a form of, is how we become purified when we are being initiated into the process of devotional service. So we might say, Om Pavitra Pavitra Va Sarva Vasta Gato Piva Yasmere Pundari Kaksham Sabhya Vyantara Suchi. And that mantra says the same thing, that it doesn't matter whether one is purified or unpurified. That means that one has some material contamination, material desires and motivation, or is completely liberated from all material desires. If one remembers the lotus-eyed Lord, and which was mentioned in the previous verse.
I'm so sorry, Prabhupada, for being late.
That's okay, yeah. So the previous verse mentioned that one should worship the lotus-eyed Supreme Person of God. It's the same. Pundarikaksham or Andaravindaksham. Then one becomes completely cleansed spiritually and materially. Material body becomes cleansed and the spirit soul becomes, one comes to perceive things on the spiritual platform. That internal purification means that we begin to see things spiritually and our body is cleansed so that we're able to worship the Lord in the archana process. So we're at the verse, text number 27, chapter 16. So, when we, the time of initiation, we chant that mantra, Oma Pavitra Pavitra Vasarva, you've been to me initiation, you've seen it, chant that. So Prabhupada, he would often, at an initiation, he would quote that mantra. And it's very similar to what is being quoted here, by the process, by offering respects to Lord Varaha, of course, Mother Earth had some association with, who was saved by Lord Varaha, then one becomes purified. And when one is purified, one becomes then fit to serve the personality of Godhead. So, you know, the initiation process means that we begin by worshipping, by remembering the Lord. The initiation process means let us begin remembering the Lord. And initiation means this is the beginning of your practice of how to always remember the Lord, to be trained to remember the Lord night and day. So she's going to perform the Payavrata, and that means during that time, the main thing she'll be doing is performing those particular types of austerities whereby she reduces all the material activities related to her body, and that there is just the constant remembrance of the personality of Godhead. So when we become initiated into devotional service, that's what we do. We begin, let us remember, you know, Pundarikaksham, the lotus eyed personality of Godhead, Sri Vishnu, Sri Vishnu, Sri Vishnu. And learn that art to always remember Krishna and never forget him. Initiation means we're starting that. We start by remembering, and the practice is to keep remembering and learn the techniques of remembering. So this is what she's doing, exactly. It's the same thing. Okay. And as it describes in that mantra, Amma Pivicha, because Naveen brought up the point that, you know, one can only perform this process by bhakti. And of course Naveen was mentioning that, you know, well, she's also praying for, you know, her sons, which is not quite, you know, pure bhakti. But the point is that not everyone that gets initiated into devotional service is completely purified. But we begin by remembering the Lord, and that makes us completely fit, within and without, to begin. There is no other qualification that we can remember the personality of Godhead, and then from that point we want to sincerely take up the process of to keep remembering the Lord. That is our qualification. So, and here also, despite the fact that she has some material motivation, it doesn't matter. You know, people come to devotional service, they can be, you know, in the Bhagavatam, it describes they can be yavanas and chandalas. One time Prabhupada was in Melbourne. He said, someone asked Prabhupada, can the dog eaters become Krishna conscious? He said, yes. If you give them lots of prasadam and get them to chant Hare Krishna, they'll forget about dog eating. See? So if someone is a dog eater, or even lower, and they come and they sit before the Guru and they remember the Lord, and their sincere desire is that from that point, I want to learn, give up my bad habits and just remember the Lord, they're qualified. Such is the potency of remembering Lord. So this is exactly how she is beginning this Payavrata. Yeah. It's the same process that we follow. And as we had a discussion before, that based upon the principle that Prabhupada gives the example of Krishna consciousness, that we don't go along necessarily just according to our own strength. And he gives the example that we may be out on a bicycle going at 10 kilometres an hour, but if we hang on to the truck and the truck is going 80 kilometres an hour, then we will also go 80 kilometres an hour with ease, without effort. So if we hang on to Krishna, then we get Krishna consciousness. We have the same vision that Krishna has, according to our full capacity as a spirit soul. And that connection with Krishna is through the parampara. And Krishna is connected to Brahma. Brahma has given this process to Kashyapa. Kashyapa is given to the deity. So they're all hanging on to the truck, or the lotus feet of Krishna. So that's the mantra. Twande, that's the mantra he said. So he's saying to a deity, find some dirt, you know, if it's available. Because what happens if you can't find some dirt dug up by a boar? It might be some other. The other types of dirt are considered auspicious in the Vedas. the dirt from around the Tulsi, and use that. The dirt from around anthills, make sure they haven't got ants in them though. You're going to smear it over your body.
Many miles, bro.
What's that?
Many miles.
Many.
Lots of ants in my house.
Yes, well, they're very auspicious. Rub it all over you. Just rub it all over your children as they're going out the door. They'll love it. No, but she has to rub that on the dark moon day. This is the day before the brata begins. Smear it all over the body and then bathe. Don't forget to bathe after. That's important. And then chant this mantra. I'll say it again. Twam devi adi varahina.
What about the snake bit?
Yeah, whatever that was. Twam devi adi varahina rasa stanam ichita haritasi namastubhyam patmanam he pranasaya. And this is the mantra that deity should remember after having that bath. Mother Earth, you are raised, you know, lifted by the Supreme Person of Godhead in the form of a boar because of your desiring to have a place to stay. I pray that you kindly vanquish all the reactions of my sinful life. I offer my respectful obeisances unto you. Very nice mantra there. I think we have a korma shalagram on the altar in the temple, right? I have one at home as well. Korma is the Vaishnava deity that one worships if one is having trouble with Shami, you know, in one's astrological chart.
Korma. Having trouble having a Shami.
If someone in their chart, that Shani, Saturn, is giving them trouble, then Korma is the Vaishnava deity to worship for that. One can also worship Nrisimha because Shani is also a great devotee of Nrisimha. He's also a devotee of Krishna. You know, there's that story where Shanidev wanted to visit baby Krishna. I don't know all the details, but he went there, and of course everyone was scared of him because he had a fearsome sort of a form, so he was sort of shooed away. And then he was feeling very morose. He was on the outskirts of Vrindavan. And then Krishna appeared to him there and said, if you come here to worship me, you will see me here. So there's that Shani temple, you know, somewhere on there. Yeah, it's good. So so Krishna, you know, Shani is a devotee of Krishna, and especially through Nrisimha, and especially through the, Varaha, the boar. No, it's Korma. Korma, yeah, that's Korma. Varaha, the boar, is... that's Rahu. The boar is the boar. The boar is, yeah, it's the deity Rahu. He gets down into the murky depths of the universe and picks up, yeah. So Varaha is Varaha. If one is having trouble with Rahu, one can worship Varaha. Yeah, it's Rahu. Yeah. Shani is Korma, that's right. So, but we also, we have a Varaha on our altar in Melbourne here. I have a Varaha at home anyway. But these are nice prayers. If you have shalagrams, or if you come, you know, if you want to rid yourself, kick a million Rahus away, you offer this one prayer to Varaha. Very protective. You know, so like on Varaha's appearance day. You know, sometimes we have Varaha's appearance day. Remember that? Mm. So you can actually go to the altar there, if there's a Varaha, and you can offer a prayer like this. Very pleasing. And offer it with bhakti, and it'll put you in a completely purified state where you become eligible to worship the Lord in pure devotional service. So, you know, you can find different prayers like this for all the different deities on there, and on their appearance days, you can worship them like that. My spiritual master said to me that, you know, that he wanted me that with the shalagrams I have to, you know, find nice select prayers and worship them with such prayers as well. So I sometimes get these prayers and put them in a little shallow ground worship book. Thereafter, one should perform his daily spiritual duties and then with great attention offer worship to the deity of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and also to the altar, the sun, water, fire, and the spiritual master. As we see, Prabhupada would mention in his lectures that, you know, Shri Gurahara, Dhananjana Chanana, Sringara Tan Mandir, Majanaga, Vitasya Bhaktanjana Chanana Jatobi, Vande Groshan, Charananam. The Lord is absolute, and you get, he is non different from his place in paraphernalia. You get the same benefit by cleansing the altar as you do the deity. So in other words, if someone is in the deity room, Prabhupada says this specifically, if someone's in the deity and they're bathing the Lord, you know, they've just had an abhishek or something, or they're doing an abhishek. So like, you know, Thursday we did the abhishek for Gaura-Nitai. So we're bathing the deity, you know, in different substances and then cleansing. And just on the floor, there are devotees who are, you know, cleaning the floor to make so people don't slip. And then after everything, they clean up the altar. They get exactly the same benefit as those who actually bathe the deity with the substance. There's no difference. No difference at all. See, the interesting thing is that sometimes you see the Brahmins and the Brahmanis, you know, they all want to bathe the Lord, which is difficult because they're only little deities and there's only a certain amount of substances, and sometimes when you get too many people it becomes chaotic and mistakes happen and the deities get hurt and things. But the whole time the floor constantly needs a little bit of attention and they'll get the same benefit. But, they're seeing some difference, you know, that they're getting more benefit than the ones, but there is no difference, no difference at all. It's exactly the same. In fact, those who understand that and, you know, cleanse the floor during the abhishek and what have you, in a humble state of mind, they, you know, the Lord appreciates that humble state of mind. So, the sun, of course, the Lord situated within the sun, water, fire, and the spiritual master. These are all representations of the personality of Godhead. Namastubhyam bhagavate purushaya mahiyase sabhabhuta nivasaya vasudeva sakshine. O Supreme Personality of Godhead, greatest of all, who lives in everyone's heart and in whom everyone lives, O witness of everything, O Vasudeva, supreme and all-pervading person, I offer my respectful obeisances unto you. So these are verses to worship that personality of Godhead in his different features. He's all-pervading. He's in everyone's heart and he witnesses everything. So if one is, one doesn't have to, in serving the Lord, find some central place of attention. So one may think that, well, the people, they're bathing the Lord with the juices and things and the Panchamrita, or Krishna will notice them. I'm right at the other side of the deity room just cleansing the floor here. He probably won't notice because she's getting so much nectar over there. But he's all-pervading. He sees everything and he's in everyone's heart and he knows that, you know, nice devotional move within the heart, and he reciprocates with that. Namo Vaktaya Sukshmaya Patana Purushaya Cha Tatu Vimshagna Gaya Guna Sankhyana Hitave. I offer my respectful obeisances unto you, the Supreme Person. Being very subtle, you are never visible to materialize. You are the knower of the 24 elements, and you are the inaugurator of the Sankhya Yoga system. Purport. Chaturvimshaguna, the 24 elements, are the five gross elements, earth, water, fire, air and ether, the three subtle elements, mind, intelligence and false ego, the 10 senses, five for working and five for acquiring knowledge, the five sense objects, and contaminated consciousness. These are the subject matter of Sankhya Yoga, which was inaugurated by Lord Kapila. This Sankhya Yoga was again propounded by another Kapila, but he was an atheist, and this system, his system is not accepted as bona fide. So, this personality of Godhead, who is the Supreme Person, very, very subtle, can't be seen by the visible eyes, but still, he knows everything about the material elements. So he is not, although, you know, when we look anywhere in the material world, so he's all pervading, but he's a person. Although Krishna is in the spiritual world, he's also in their heart, in everyone's heart. So he's all pervading, every atom. But he's a person, he's one person. But he's so subtle, spirit is so subtle that you can't see him within any of the material elements. So one may think, oh, he's not present in the material world. But he is fully conscious of everything, fully conscious because he's fully present within everything, even, you know, all the material elements and material atoms. So it's not as if he's disconnected. Although he's invisible, doesn't mean he's not there. And although he's all-pervading, doesn't mean he's not a person. And that was explained by very nicely by Kapila Dev. Namo dvi shirishne tripade tutu shingaya tantabe satahashtaya jagyaya trayi vidyatmane namaha. I offer my respectful obeisances unto you, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who have two heads, Prandiya and Udayana. Three legs, Savanatraya, four horns, the four Vedas, and seven hands, the seven chandas, such as Gayatri. I offer my obeisances unto you, whose heart and soul are the three Vedic rituals, Kamakanda, Gyanakanda, and Upasanakanda, and who expand these rituals in the form of sacrifice. So, you know, these two heads is like the 10 different life heads, five principal, five secondary, three legs, four Vedas, seven hands, the different meters of the Vedas, etc. Heart and soul of the three Vedic rituals. So, although he is the Supreme Person who's all-pervading, because he is the knower of everything, and you know, Veda means knowledge, and that knowledge is in itself Krishna, you know, or the personality of Godhead. He is a personification of knowledge. He is Satchitananda Vigraha. He is the form of knowledge. And that form of knowledge in this world manifests as the Vedas and the different Vedic processes. That is non-different from Krishna. Namaha Shivaya Rudraya Namaha Shakti Daraya Cha Sava Vidya Dipatahi Bhutanam Pade Namaha. I offer my respectful obeisances unto you, Lord Shiva or Rudra, who are the reservoir of all potencies, the reservoir of all knowledge, and the master of everyone. Purport. It is the system for one to offer obeisances unto the expansion or incarnation of the Lord. Lord Shiva is the incarnation of ignorance, one of the material modes of nature. So when we offer respectful obeisances unto the Lord, we understand that he expands as the personality of Lord Shiva. Lord Shiva is not separate from the Lord, he is one with and different from the Lord. So one may study the Vedas and feel that, you know, there appear to be different supreme destinations from the Vedas, such as different demigods, even up to Lord Shiva. But actually, there is only one destination. The goal of the Vedas is only Krishna, Vasudeva, because these other manifestations, or you know, of demigods all the way up to Lord Shiva, are nothing but the personality of Godhead himself, just expanding from the personality of Godhead. So there is only one goal in the Vedas, and that is the personality of Godhead. He is the knower of the Vedas, he is the Vedas, that is another form of God, and he is the goal of the Vedas. So, you know, all those verses that we just chanted then, you know, very similar to that verse in the Bhagavad Gita. It is just another way of saying that, you know, we see in the 15th chapter, text number 15:15 Vaidaischa Severaham Eva Vejo Vedantakrit Vedavid Eva Chaham. I am seated in everyone's heart, that we have discussed. So he's all pervading. He said, I am. I'm a person. Krishna is speaking. That's me, the person. And yet I'm all pervading in everyone's heart. Same thing we read here. And from me come remembrance, knowledge, and forgetfulness. So that's the purport of him being in everyone's heart, that he has control over what we know and what we forget. And by all the Vedas I am to be known, even though there appears to be different demigods up to see there are just a matter of expansions of me. There is only Krishna. I am the compiler of the Vedanta, and I am the knower of the Vedanta. So, you know, this is expressing the same just expanding that truth, so helping us to understand that all these different features, we're worshipping that one Supreme Lord. Namo Hiranyagarbha Pranaya Jigat Atmane Yogeshwara Shariraya Namaste Yoga Hitavahi. I offer my respectful obeisances unto you who are situated as Hiranyagarbha, the source of life, the supersoul of every living entity. Your body is the source of the opulence of all mystic power. I offer my respectful obeisances unto you. So he appears as the three different Vishnus. Namastha adidevaya shakshi bhutaya tinnamaha narayanaya rishaye Naraya Hari Namaha. I offer my respectful obeisances unto you who are the original personality of Godhead, the witness in everyone's heart and the incarnation of Narayana Rishi in the form of a human being. O personality of Godhead, I offer my respectful obeisances unto you. So he is the personality of Godhead, and yet He descends in the form like a human being to show us how to disassociate ourselves from the process of sense gratification and instead perform activities dedicated to the personality of Godhead, which is synonymous with sannyas. Namo marakatta sama vapushe digitashiye keshavaya namastubhyam namaste pitavasase visvasase. My Lord, I offer my respectful obeisances unto you who are dressed in yellow garments, whose bodily hue resembles the marakatta gem, and who have full control over the goddess of fortune. O my Lord Keshava, I offer my respectful obeisances unto you. So here, one who worships this very beautiful Lord who attracts the goddess of fortune. One meditates upon him. Now, of course, for a deity, understanding that somehow, you know, the and of course, one who lives in a heavenly situation in the heavenly planets, that's definitely the blessings of the goddess of fortune. So by worshipping the personality of Godhead, it's very attractive to the goddess of fortune. Naturally, the goddess of fortune will become attracted to those devotees who are worshipping her dear most Lord and offer them all benedictions, such as the deity's desire to, you know, again have her sons and you know, the heavenly planet restored to its former condition. So there's no need to worship the goddess of fortune separately. There's no need to worship other, you know, demigods or Shiva separately or what have you. Here Kashyapa is saying, you just worship the person I've got here, that's all you need to do. And all the other demigods up to Lord Shiva, who may have some ability to help you in this situation, including this goddess of fortune herself, they'll all be, you know, very kind upon you, offering their blessings, because in fact, they are in fact expansions of the different shaktis of the personality of Godhead himself, or expansions of the Lord himself in some cases. Tham sava varada pumsham varinya varadashabha. Ataste shese dira padarinum upasate. O most exaltable and worshipable Lord, best of those who bestow benediction, you can fulfill the desires of everyone, and therefore those who are sober for their own welfare worship the dust of your lotus feet. Anvava tanta yam devaha shischa ta pada padmaya aspriya yanta eva modham bhagavan me prasidatam. All the demigods as well as the goddess of fortune engage in the service of his lotus feet. Indeed, they respect the fragrance of those lotus feet. May the Supreme Personality of Godhead be pleased with me. Ete mantra harishikesham vahana purar sriktam achayet chadaya yutta pad yopasa parsana dibi. Kashyapa Muni continued by chanting all these mantras, welcoming the Supreme Personality of Godhead with faith and devotion, and offering him items of worship such as padya and agya. One should worship Keshava, Hrishikesh, Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Because, you know, Keshava, another meaning of Keshava is the Lord of Brahma and Shiva and all other demigods. Keshava. As when you break the words down, that is one of the meanings of Keshava as well. So here, you know, she's being advised, you don't need to go anywhere else. You know, you put your faith and you worship Krishna. Who is Keshava, the Lord of Brahma, the Lord of Shiva, or to speak of the other demigods, Hrishikesha, who is the master of the senses, the proprietor of the senses, and Krishna, the husband of the goddess of fortune. With faith, then you know, everything will be achieved. There is no, he can fulfill all desires because he is non-different. You know, the goddess of fortune is his expansion, Brahma is his expansion, Shiva is his expansion. You know, they're all manifestations of Krishna's energies. There's no need to go anywhere else to fulfill your desires. That's the point. Therefore, there's that verse in the Bhagavad Gita. So what you know, Kashyapa is pointing out to her, that, see, nice verse from, where is it? Text number 46 in the second chapter. Yavanata udapane savada samputorike tavan saveshuvedeshu brahmanasya vijanataha. All purposes that are served by the small pond can at once be served by the great reservoirs of water. Similarly, all the purposes of the Vedas can be served by one who knows the purpose behind them. So here, you know, these mantras are giving this same point. See, in the Gita, Krishna is trying to draw people's, you know, minds away from following some material process to fulfill their goals in the material world. Generally, either by their own activities or by worshipping some powerful people or by worshipping some demigods. These are all different material processes. The whole Bhagavad Gita, Krishna is saying, don't do any of those things. Give up all those things. Just take shelter of me alone. And everything that can be fulfilled, as you think through all these other different ways, you know, they're like the little ponds. But I am the great unlimited river. So, you know, when you have the, you know, if you go to the, you know, places where they have the great rivers in India still not running nice and free. You can drink from it, you can bathe in it, you can wash your clothes in it, you can do everything in the same place. You don't have to go one place and there's a little, you know, pond there and, you know, the water may not be as good or, you know, you have to line up or, you know, there's only so much quantity and, you know, so many different things. You can only do one thing there, then you have to go to another place. So much trouble. So these prayers are like that, just reiterating the same verses from the Bhagavad Gita. Okay. So now, if one, by chanting these mantras and welcoming the Supreme Person of God with faith and devotion, now, what happens is when you chant these mantras, just like we've heard the mantras, and then we get a little understanding what they're saying, which is the same thing Krishna is saying in the Bhagavad Gita, and then, you know, means that we put our faith in it. You know, of course, if we have any doubts, you know, we can ask a question or make any comments. But gradually, you know, if our doubts are removed, as Arjuna removed all his doubts and he understood, yes, Krishna is the Supreme Person of God. I can just put my faith in him. Everything will be done. I don't have to go elsewhere or do any other thing or solve any of my problems in a material way. So then, the mantras themselves invoke faith and devotion. Just as, you know, we're studying these mantras, we're studying, you know, from the start, we're studying Bhakti Shastri, Bhakti Vaibhava, Bhakti Vedanta. As we do so, what we're literally offering prayers, but as we're doing that, we're all these slokas are creating faith. And as that faith, you know, becomes all the doubts removed, then we can apply ourselves more fully. See, Arjuna didn't want to fight in the battle of Kurukshetra. because he had so many doubts about, you know, what was going to be the outcome of that activity. Now, when all his doubts were removed, and Krishna said to him, "You get up, without lethargy, with full enthusiasm, Arjuna, you do your devotional service." So, you know, here, Kashyapa, these prayers are like that. Kashyapa is saying, you do this payabrata, but don't muck about with it, or don't hesitate, or, you know, don't put it aside. You do it with full enthusiasm and without lethargy, you know, and chanting these prayers and fixing your mind on these prayers, removing all doubt that there is any other thing that you should be doing. So it's like that. So they actually invoke the proper attitude in the performer if they're received and understood through the disciplic succession. Then it becomes possible to actually do the Pāyavrata. Just like Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, he says, always think of me. Here's the most confidential knowledge. Always think of me, become my devotee. Now, Prabhupada says, yeah, why does he say that straight after? Become my devotee. Who can always think of Krishna? If we go out in the street and say to someone, they say, "Oh, my life is so hard. I've got so many problems. Can you help me? How do I solve it?" Yep. Always think of Krishna. You know, oh, Krishna, oh, that's that little blue boy with the calves and the flute. Is that him, the one? Yeah. Oh, he's an Indian, isn't he? He's from India. Is that his girlfriend there? Is he dead now? No, I want you to always think of Krishna. Oh, okay, I'll give it a go. How long do you think they'll last? So therefore, Krishna says, always think of me, become my devotee. We discussed in the beginning of the class, because if you don't become a devotee, how will you always think of Krishna? If you don't hear, that means become my devotee means you dedicate your life to knowing how to serve me. You become a proper devotee, learn that art from a bona fide guru, how to serve me, how to know what I want and how to give that to me, how to reciprocate with me on a transcendental platform of love, not, you know, some other strange way, giving exactly what I want for my satisfaction, not anything that you want to do in the name of serving God, but just what I want. You learn that, because it's not so easy to understand, then you'll always be able to think of me. It says, always think of me, become my devotee. That is not possible. So here also, you know, Devahuti has been recommending, you perform this Pāyavrata Vrata. Well, how can she do that? You know, unless she comes to a platform of faith and devotion. And how do you come to a platform of faith and devotion? By meditating upon Krishna in the authorized way as given by, you know, Krishna himself. Krishna to Brahma, Adam. So in the beginning, one of the first verses we read was that, going back to verse 25, you know, and it says that in the bright fortnight of the month of Phalgun, February, March, for 12 days ending with Dwadasi, one should observe the vows subsisting only on milk and should worship the lotus-eyed Supreme Personality of Godhead with all devotion. So we discussed that point there. Right, that unless one has that, you know, is trained in bhakti, how is it possible that one can serve the Lord with such dedication and to undergo all sorts of, you know, difficulties on behalf of the Lord without faith and devotion? It's not possible.
If one has a material desire, is it possible? Because in this case, Aditi wanted a son.
Yes, we did discuss that. And that's that's why I brought up the point of the We spent 10 minutes on that one.
Sorry.
That's okay. I'll explain it again anyway. It's the truck and the bike example. See? That when we come to Krishna consciousness, when I came to Krishna consciousness, I did not come here to be, Gangisvara consciousness, or that I will have my consciousness and just expand my own little worldview and remain in that worldview. You didn't come to be in your own. You actually come. We come here to, see how God sees everything, and for us to try and see things in the same way God is looking at everything. So we're not God, so we can't do that. But the example is, as Prabhupada gives, if someone is riding their bike at 10 kilometers an hour, but they catch hold of the truck or the tram, then they go at the same speed as the truck, with very little effort. So we catch a hold of Krishna's lotus feet, we go at the same, we become Krishna conscious, not Gangisvara consciousness. So a deity, it doesn't matter what, the consciousness is, if one, through the disciples, to link with Krishna, you must connect with someone who is connected with Krishna. That's called the parampara. And if you connect with Krishna, you can become Krishna conscious. Despite the fact that we may be in our own limited consciousness, when we connect like that, we go at the speed of Guru, at the speed of, who's in Krishna consciousness, who's thinking in the same terms as Krishna is.
I guess I meant if you're approaching with a material desire, the danger is once your material desire is fulfilled, that you'll be focused for that period because you have a material desire. But once it's fulfilled, you will say, "Okay, I don't need to do this anymore."
Well,
desires are unlimited.
What's that?
Desires are unlimited.
Many, many different desires, yeah, that's right, they go on forever. So, now, here, a deity has her material desires, that let my sons be situated nicely in heaven. Now, what would happen there? The nature of this material world is they'll be all right for some time, and of course, if they just get back into heaven, then again, the demons will come and, overthrow them like that. So, sometimes the Lord will fulfill our material desires, but he doesn't give himself unless there's bhakti. So if we have material desires, but we worship Krishna under the direction of the pure devotees, our material desires will be fulfilled, but we'll also get Krishna, like Dhruva Maharaj. Then when we get Krishna, like Dhruva Maharaj did, then he thinks, oh, now I'm not even interested in my material desires, and yet they've still been fulfilled. There's a fourth canto. We're in the eighth canto now. You've got to hold these things in our mind as we go through. We've got to hold all the nine cantos in their head so that when we get to the tenth canto.
So I guess what you're saying, when you were under the direction of Vaishnava and Guru, that is a kind of protection that regardless of what our motive is, because of their association and instructions.
That's right. We're travelling at the speed of the truck and not at the speed of the bicycle. We're not travelling, we're not doing things according to our limited consciousness, we're doing things according to Krishna consciousness. And how is it we're doing things according to Krishna consciousness when we're not so Krishna conscious? Because the Guru is Krishna conscious, the Parampara is Krishna conscious. So he's said to chant these mantras with faith and devotion. Very, very important. And this is the difference that we see. You can go to India. I sometimes discuss with, people from the Hindu background, and I'll say something and remind them of a story, and they'll tell me the story. And then they'll tell me what it means, and I think, wow, you just missed it. You have no idea what that story means. You've got it all backwards, upside down, inside out, topsy-turvy. You have no idea the meaning of that story. I'd say there's nothing. You've gained nothing from it. You know the story better than I do. Still, you know nothing about it. There's nothing, very little gain. Without bhakti, they can read these stories, and they just don't get the same result. And if they, without the understanding, then how do they even practice it? You know, there are doubts and lack of faith. Why should they go to any difficulty for something they have no faith in? Because they've not understood the story. So there must be devotion. There must be bhakti, faith and devotion to actually derive the benefit from any of the activities that we perform in Krishna consciousness. And of course we're reading this Payavrata. So sometimes we can perform aspects of this Payavrata for the purpose of begetting good children in Krishna consciousness. And to do that with faith and devotion, you get the you'll understand how to apply it in this age of Kali, and according to your circumstances, and how to get the good results from it in a way that's very pleasing to Krishna. Otherwise, it becomes neglected or improperly applied. So, in the beginning, the devotee should chant the Dvadasakshara mantra and offer flower garlands, incense, and so on. After worshipping the Lord in this way, one should bathe the Lord with milk and dress him with proper garments, a sacred thread, and ornaments. After offering water to wash the lotus feet, one should again worship the Lord with fragrant flowers, incense, and other paraphernalia. So, the purport, the Dvadasakshara, Dvadasakshara mantra is Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. While worshipping the deity, one should ring a bell with his left hand and offer Padya, Agya, Vashtra, that's clothing, Ganda, that's scents, Vala, flowers, garlands, Abharana, that'll be Bhushana, sacred thread, ornaments. In this way, one should bathe the Lord with milk, dress him, and again worship him with all paraphernalia, such as offering some food. You know, we quite often offer the boga at the end of everything. As Kashyapa Muni is saying here, that this is how we're going to worship Krishna. You know, who's also known as Keshava or Hrishikesha or Vasudeva. So, if one can afford to, one should offer the deity fine rice boiled in milk with clarified butter and molasses. While chanting the same original mantra, one should offer all this to the fire. So that's like sweet rice, right? Sweet rice?
Jaggery
rice. Jaggery rice. Jaggery rice. And one should offer all this into the fire. So, this... we can either offer to the deity, or we can offer to the fire. Sometimes if we're worshipping the sacred fire, then the Lord is established in a pot, and all of these different items can be also offered to the Lord there in the pot. Sometimes they do both the fire and the worship of the deity. One should offer all the prasad to a Vaishnava or offer him some of the prasad and then take some oneself. After this, one should offer the deity Archman and then Bidunat and then again worship the Lord. So, again, we offer that prasad to a Vaishnava and then we accept that Maha prasad, Maha Maha prasad. That's a proper system that, when generally when we serve prasad, we try and, find, one or two or some of the very senior devotees and make sure that they accept some prasad first and then distribute the prasad. And it's very important that the persons who are, the ceremony, Jagyamana, the persons we're doing the ceremony for, that they also get some of that Maha or Maha Maha Prasad. So, if I do a Jagya, what I like to do, a fire Jagya, I like to, when we offer some food into the fire, then I tell them, you take some of that Maha, and you put some back into the pots, but you keep some separate as Maha. Don't put it all back into the pots. And then some of that Maha is then supposed to be given to the devotee, the senior devotee, and then that is then some of the people you're doing the ceremony for. They should specifically eat some of that as well as the other prasad. It becomes prasadam.
So what you put in the fire, that is maha.
So for instance, the people will bring a plate of the items and I'll take a little pinch of each and put it in. I don't empty the whole lot in. So whatever's left on that plate is maha.
Okay.
So I don't put it all in. I just put a little pinch of it.
What is left in the pot, that is just prasad.
Yeah, what is left on the pot is prasad. But it is good to put a little pinch of everything into the pots as well, from that maha. And then that which is the maha, from which we put into the fire or put the plate we put before the deity, that can be kept separate as well. So a little bit goes in the pots and that can be kept separate. And some of that should be offered to the senior Vaishnavas with prasad. And specifically some of those remnants should be kept by the persons who's they're hosting the program at their home or the ceremony is being done for them. Like that. Yeah.
I did not know that. I thought the whole thing becomes maha prasad. Even what's in the pot. That's just prasad.
That's why we have that's prasad, yeah. That's why we have these classes.
Then, how do we understand, let's say if we are serving any spiritual master, anyone, then we are offering and we do that prasad, we are.
So, sometimes. Sometimes when we serve the food, sometimes when the food's been offered, sometimes the food is offered and then given to the Vaishnava, very senior devotee. Sometimes the food's just directly given straight to them as a way of offering to Krishna. As possible. A lot of them, some have preferences. You can actually feed Krishna through a very elevated, you feed that Vaishnava, but they generally like to offer to Krishna, but you can actually feed that Vaishnava and Krishna has accepted it as that devotee, that's the offering, as he eats it, like that. So, So for a lot of people in India, I do see that that's how, you know, that's some of the ways that they've been doing for many generations. They just they may not even have deities in the home or what have you. And sometimes, you know, what they do is they get you to do the yajna, then they cook. They feel purified. Now I'm purified, now I'll cook. And then they feed the brahmana. Then, and that's the offering. So for instance, if we take some, the maha is in fact the plate that's been offered to Krishna. And then that food is taken off the altar, or, you know, we've taken a little pinch of it, of that plate, and put it in the fire. And whatever's left on that plate, of all the selection of foods, and a little pinch has been offered, the rest of it is called Mahaprasad. When the Vaishnava then accepts a little of that Mahaprasad, it's called Mahamaha. But basically, that Mahaprasad, generally first, a little bit of each is put back into the pots. It's already prasad, but, you know, you can also put, you know, if you didn't put a little bit back in the pots, it's still accepted as prasad. Because sometimes in preaching engagements, while you're offering, literally they have to start serving because of food. You know, when we're doing the concerts, and I've been told that that's, you know, we offer and we start offering, and okay, Krishna, and then you've just literally got to start serving, you know, literally as the offering's going on, you know, Krishna's eating his bit and the rest is going out, you know, and it's a very, very quickly, sometimes prasad is just going out so quick you can barely, you know, you get that offering, get it up there quick, and, you know, going out. Yeah, I remember, because I used to do the catering at when I was looking after the farm. So I was doing all those concerts that now Melbourne does. I was doing all of them myself. And but we had very few helpers. Now they have whole teams now. We had just, you know, I had my kids, a couple of kids, a few uni students. Sometimes we get one or two of the Indian men from. And then sometimes I pull people out of the audience. You want a free meal? Come and, you know, peel these potatoes, wash these pots. You know, you can eat. Come and eat all day if you want. Oh, okay. Anyway, so I used to cook the meals, and then once the meals were cooked, I'd cook the pakoras because they just kept going. And I used to cook. I used to have the big wok that was. You know, those huge big woks, I'd have two of them. So two of the biggest woks you can get. And I'd have I'd put the heat full bore. So usually if you got that heat full bore, you'd be burning it in about 5 minutes. But so what I got it full bore, and what I'd do is I'd have buckets full of cauliflowers all cut, and a huge bucket of bakora mix. And with both my hands, I'd pick in as much cauliflower as I can get my two hands, dip them all into the batter, do like this, and into the ghee, and I would fill that pot up. Within 2 minutes, I'd have hundreds and hundreds of pakoras in that one, and then I would fill the next pot. Now, by the time I'd filled the next one, if you gave the other ones a little shake, it broke them all up, because it was so hot, it melted it on. It sort of sealed it, because when you put so many in there, and it's really hot, it just seals all the batter, so it won't come off. And then you break it off, and then because you've got so many in there, it immediately cools the ghee down, and they cook at a perfect temperature until it heats up again. And by the time it heats up again, you've got all of them out, you've got all the other ones out, and then straight, it's heated up so much that you put the other. So you're cooking, you know, like 400 bakoras at a time, and they're going out quicker than you can sort sort of sit and do it. One time I was doing that for, I must have been doing it for like, you know, 8 hours solid. It was just, there was a queue, you know, like from this, the start of that room to the back of that room, and it didn't stop, hour after hour after hour, it was just like this. And I got so tired, at one stage the ghee was like boiling hot, and instead of dipping my hands into the collies, I went to dip them into the ghee. Right? And I'm just like, and I just stopped myself. I'm thinking, whoa, what are you doing? I'm literally going to dip both hands into boiling ghee. And it's, you know, hot as you can get. But you know, the offerings, as you can imagine, that pace of cooking, the offerings are, you know, get it on the altar. If you make a fresh batter. So, you know, if you've got the one, you know, if you've got barrels and barrels of batter already, when they're all gone, okay, you make a fresh batter, okay, let's do another offering. And then you've only got so much time for that offering to be there, where they're just, you know, demanding. Are you getting more of them nuggets? So the point is that, you know, the that Mahaprasad, that means, in that case, the point was that you didn't have time to get the Mahaprasad into the stack of bakoras. While they're being offered, that's all prasad. You haven't put the Mahaprasad from that plate into the batch. You know, literally, they're just going out, you know, before you can chant all the mantras. Sometimes there's like hundreds and hundreds of people just lined up, buying as many as they can, for hours and hours and hours. So it's a very quick process. So that's all prasad. So some of the, you know, but if you can, you can take, you know, a little bit out of each, you know, of the maha and you put it in there. You know. So for preaching, sometimes a little, you know, some of the items, you just do what you can, do as best as you can. But the fact that you've got thousands of people, like 8, 10, 12 hours at a time, without stopping, coming to get those bakuras, that's prasad. That's all attractive. That's Krishna. Yeah. And no one else, you know, gets that result. That's prasad. That. So Krishna's in. Now then it says, thereafter one should silently murmur the mantra 108 times and offer prayers to the Lord for his glorification. Then one should circumambulate the Lord. And finally, with great delight and satisfaction, offer obeisances falling straight like a rod, dandavat. After touching to one's head all the flowers and water offered to the deity, one should throw them into a sacred place. Then one should feed at least 2 brahmanas with sweet rice. Because I don't eat sweet rice, so don't feed me sweet rice. But find some brahmanas who do eat sweet rice. Don't feed brahmanas sweet rice if they don't want it. I get asked me if I eat sweet rice. That's the problem. I used to be able to eat sweet rice. So sweet rice is a popular one, you know. And I literally sometimes have to tell people, you know, you're not cooking sweet rice for me. You know, because I can't eat, because they particularly wanted to give it to the deities and then for the brahmana to eat it. And if I'm the only brahmana there, I know they're going to give me some, and they get really disappointed if I say I can't eat that. They feel offended, so I tell them, everyone now, don't make sweet rice or rice. But sometimes, you know, some people, you know, when they cook, it's all different rice preparations. There's yellow rice, there's this rice, and there's that rice, and I can't eat any rice. They've been there for hours. So I tell them now. So as you see that the flowers and everything, they're thrown into a sacred place. We don't just chuck them into the bin. You know. We don't throw them into, you know, there's a suchi place for sacred items. we don't just throw them into the, for instance, if someone goes into the baby changing room and gets some paper towels and cleans up all the baby changing room and then throws out in the bin, and then someone throws a prasadam into that same bin, that's not correct. Whether anyone's watching that, I don't know. And we can monitor that. But, there are prasadam bins and there are bins for... they may want to mark the bins differently, because sometimes they have some of the bins and people put their plates and they also put them down near the toilets. And they probably want to put a different type of bin down near the toilets rather than, the same ones that we... Because some people think, oh, I'm heading down, I've got my plate, I'll put it in as I'm heading to the toilet, put it into that one. But people are also coming out of the baby changing room, the ladies or the men's, and they may have paper towels or something they've used in a moochie way and goes in there as well. So that shouldn't happen. One should perfectly honour the respectable brahmanas one has fed, and then after taking their permission, one should take prasad with his friends and relatives. For that night, one should observe strict celibacy, and the next morning, after bathing again, with purity and attention, one should bathe the deity of Vishnu with milk and worship him according to the methods formerly stated in detail. So here, of course, it's saying one should take prasad with his friends and relatives. Sometimes I see that the... quite often you see the host... they eat at the very last. I always feel uncomfortable when they do that because, for instance, for myself, I would prefer, if I've gone to someone's home and I'm doing a program, then I particularly would like to have prasadam with those people and talk about things with those people. Not that by the time I've been there for an hour and I've got to go, then they sit down and then there's no time to chat with them. So, it's good if the, it's good if the persons who are particularly doing a home program or something, yes, they should try and serve the devotees and what have you, but at some stage they should let others take over that are willing to do that and sit down with some of the, senior devotees and take their association for that as part of the process, along with their friends and, close circle of relatives.
Meeting
culture
becomes a group.
What's that?
Meeting
culture becomes
a group.
For instance, quite often I go to a program and they'll say, you sit down and you eat, no one will eat. Mm-hmm. I'm like sitting there by myself, and they're all watching me. Right? You got a room full of people. Here I am. I'm sitting here, I think, are we? someone going to talk to me, come and sit down with me. And they're thinking it's rude, and I'm thinking it'd be nice if someone would come and sit, And I especially want to talk to the people who I've done the ceremony for. So, there's a bit of a balance there. There has to be a little bit of a balance there. Well, we don't follow rules and regulations without a purpose. Right? So in other words, say you've got some devotees there, you're thinking, it'd be rude for me to join them and eat prasadam with it. And they're thinking, I wish that person would come over and sit and eat prasadam. I particularly come here to see them. Now, which is a better, to follow a rule and regulation that has no purpose, or that the Vaishnavas and the Vaishnavis would really like you to come and sit, and there's actually a purpose to it? We don't follow rules and regulations just for the sake of them, where there's no purpose.
What about other guests who have been invited?
Forget about them. No, I'm just joking. Are they good? What about them? What do you mean? What about them?
They would feel that not welcome. That's what they would feel.
Oh, no.
If the host sat down, they would feel as if they are not welcome.
Well, if they feel like that, then don't sit down. But if they're not that sort of person and they'd be happy for you, if they all keep saying, you should go and sit. They want you to sit. They're saying, where live so-and-so? Come and sit. And they're saying, you should sit. They're saying, come and sit. No one's feeling that they're offended, but you've got that in your mind, in which case you should actually sit. So, you know, we don't do things mechanically. We should understand what is the situation in this particular place at this time. Worshipping Lord Vishnu with great faith and devotion and living only by drinking milk, one should follow this vow. One should also offer oblations to the fire and feed the brahmanas as mentioned before. Right, so doing this vow, worshipping the deity of the Lord and doing the fire jagya. And feeding the brahmanas. So again, you know, that also is... you know, previously at the very beginning, you know, it was also saying, you know, to worship the Lord, the altar, and the fire, and water, and the sun. So there's the chanting of the Gayatri, there's the, you know, the worshipping of the fire, there's the, you know, cleansing oneself with the water. And purified water, you know, that's been purified by mantra and what have you. And so all of these things are being done. So in other words, even if one has deities in the home, one can still perform a fire jagya. One can do both. So, you know, sometimes, you know, people like to do putting the deities like a welcoming, not necessarily installation, they're putting the deities on the new altar, or they've, you know, putting them on the altar for the first time. And so they like to do an abhishek, they get all the devotees around. But also like to do a fire jagya as well. So, you know, you can do both. Here it's recommended you do both. And in this way, until 12 days have passed, one should observe this Payabrata, worshipping the Lord every day, executing the routine duties, performing sacrifices, and feeding the Brahmins. From Pratipat until the 13th day of the next bright moon, Sukla, Trayadasi, one should observe complete celibacy, sleep on the floor, bathe 3 times a day, and thus execute the vow. During this period, one should not unnecessarily talk of material subjects or topics for sense gratification. One should be completely free from envy of all living entities, and one should be a pure and simple devotee of Lord Vasudeva. So, when we worship the deities in the temple, or you know, when we're chanting our japa, or if we're at a ceremony, or we're hearing a class, answering the phone. Just hold on. Hare Krishna. Hello? Yes. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Can I call you back later this evening and discuss that? Just in a meeting just now. I'm in a meeting now. Can I call you back later this evening? I'll call you back now. I'll call you back later this evening. Okay, thank you. I've got some people coming to do a ceremony. They're doing a wedding somewhere and they want me to do something straight after class, so I've got to keep the phone on, unfortunately. During any of the activities that we perform as devotees, where we're actually worshipping the Lord, we shouldn't unnecessarily talk material subjects or topics. It should all be related to the actual service we're doing. We should, you know, focus. We shouldn't be thinking, you know, of other things that divert our attention, including, you know, maybe possibly being envious of other living entities. And we should be a pure and simple devotee of Lord Vishnu. So pure, meaning that our mind and senses are controlled and just fixed on in the service of the Lord. And simple devotee, we're not trying to do two things at once. We're not doing it with some ulterior purpose. You know, we are just doing that ceremony for the satisfaction of the Lord. We don't have any other motives in our heart. So, you know, a simple devotee like that, not thinking that, oh, you know, if I'm here and I position myself nicely in this situation, this would be very good for my public relations, for my promotion of myself within this community, you know, sort of, I'll get some good mileage from being here at this, you know, get some good attention. People think I'm a big devotee, I'm with these people in this particular, and that we shouldn't have all these sort of things going on in our head. Surprisingly enough, that is the sort of thing that goes on. Thereafter, following the directions of the Shastra, with help from Brahmanas who know the Shastra, on the 13th day of the moon, one should bathe Lord Vishnu with five substances, milk, yogurt, ghee, sugar and honey, so the Panchamrita, as we did on Gopani. Giving up the miserly habit of not spending money, we should arrange for the gorgeous worship of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vishnu, who is situated in the heart of every living entity. With great attention, one must prepare an oblation of grains, boiled in ghee and milk, and must chant the Purusha Shukta mantra. The offerings of food should be of varieties of taste. In this way, one should worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead. One should satisfy the spiritual master, Acharya, who is very learned in Vedic literature. We offer, you know, our respectful obeisances and etc. to the Diksha Guru, and if he's present, of course, and offering Dakshina. The assistant priest, known as Hota, Udgata, Advarya, and Brahma. You know, the spiritual master also means the Shiksha Guru, or the senior Vaishnava who happens to be, engaging one in that particular service. One should please them by offering them clothing, ornaments and cows. This is a ceremony called Vishnu Aradhana, or worship of Lord Vishnu. So, as you see, the worship of Lord Vishnu means worshipping the Lord and his devotees. O most auspicious lady, one should perform all the ceremonies under the direction of learned acharyas and should satisfy them and their priests. By distributing prasad, one should also satisfy the brahmanas and others who have assembled. So, as it says here, you know, these ceremonies and devotional service is always performed under the direction of, senior Vaishnavas who, acharya means one who understands you know, the activities of devotional service and is performing those activities themselves, you know, properly under such guidance. So, you know, sometimes what I've seen is that sometimes, you know, a particular ceremony or festive event is being done, and there certainly may be some senior devotees, but you know, sometimes some of the senior devotees have never actually done that particular activity. But they feel that because they're amongst the senior devotees, that they, you know, will argue certain things. But, you know, like the import of acharya means that, you know, it's a person who not only understands, you know, shastrically that, but it's something that they're well practicing. So, for instance, you know, we might get a sense of it that there are many lawyers. They're all very, very, very qualified. But some get selected to sit on the as a high court judge. So there are many people who have law degrees. And they may have actually studied law even more than the high court judge. But they're not selected to be a high court judge. They may have more knowledge of the law than the high court judge. But they're not selected. They must have practiced and be seen to be well practiced in the art of law. That's like the import of acharya. They can comment, but it's the high court judge who actually does it properly. They're authorized to do it. So, you know, when you use the word acharya, it's like that. you know, there may be, you know, many senior brahmanas of the same, and some maybe even a little more senior. But, you know, you want the person who's actually guiding, you know, someone who's generally has the last say in things. And that is a person who also has that understanding, you know, the similar understanding as those personalities, but who's always doing that particular activity. The big difference. So, now that happens, it's a very important point because you see this on many levels. I remember, you know, for instance, just as an example, right? It's, you know, when we say acharya, you tend to think, okay, someone who's like, you know, proper. Now, we're talking about just general devotees also, the same principle. Sometimes, I know when my wife was decorating, she used to decorate the bathing kund. She did it for, you know, a fair while. And then some new girls come in to assist. But what she found was that instantly her opinion, because they were sort of on a similar level in one sense, not really, but in one sense, they thought that, you know, well, we all have a similar idea how to put flowers around something, and that's enough. But actually, the person who's actually been doing for some time and knows, you know, that person should be consulted, and that person should guide. Right? So just like the ladies are making, here we have the acharyas with the garlands. Mm-hmm. Making garlands for a long time. How long have you been making garlands, UT? How long have you been? 10 years?
Yes.
Yeah. So, now if some new person comes in, you know, that person may have been initiated for longer, or a brahmani for longer, but they've never made garlands. So there may be peers in some way, but actually, these people have been making garlands for 10 years, they're the ones to be followed. They have the understanding and they've been practicing. It's a very important principle. though that's the best guide, those who are doing, the understanding is there, they've received that knowledge from, they've been trained up and then they've been practicing for a long time. So what, you know, for instance, getting back to the bathing tank, what would happen is because the people, so then what happened was that my wife was literally pushed out of that service. You know, as quite often these things happen, right? People come in and they push you out. Next thing you can't, you know, there's no room for you. Because, you know, they don't recognize. And in a way, not recognizing someone's long-term activity in that is a precursor that I'm about to step on your head. Get rid of it. You know. So then what they were doing, of course, is that they put pins in places that actually started falling into the panchamrita that we're going to drink. See? Because they actually, there were things that they think they know, and the flowers start falling off, you know, halfway through the ceremony, and, you know, they've got, doing anything, they're not even washing the top, just straight into the, you know, so many things were seen, but you can't tell them anymore because now it's their service. And once it's their service, you can't tell them, they're the acharyas. But that's not the meaning of acharya. I know sometimes I've had people say, oh, you know, can I come and I'm learning how to do the, you know, fire yogas, and they come and sit with me. And then the first time they're sitting, never done a yoga before, and immediately correcting me and everything. Oh, you know, the wife's supposed to be sitting on this side and this side. And I say, well, there's actually a reason I'm doing that. I don't know, usually like that. I read in the book like that, and I said, well, actually, so then I have to explain why I've, you know, made little amendments because of the circumstance. But immediately correcting like that, you know. But they've read the book, so therefore, so they don't quite see. So, but from the first sitting, you know, there's that mood that, you know, and I see this as a very common thing that I see in this temple and other temples, that the recognition of guna karma is not there. See, in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says this. In Bhagavad Gita 4:14, is it? He says 13. Chaturvanam mayasvisa guna karma vibhagasaha tasyat khatanam abhimam vidya khatanam abhyayam. According to the three modes of material nature and the work ascribed to them. So they're all in sattva, brahmanas, they're all sattvic, but some are actually doing the work and some are just sattvic, not doing any work. Therefore, they haven't fulfilled the conditions. The four divisions of human society were created by me. So, and this is, you know, in this regard also, Prabhupada quoting that example. So many lawyers, if you get the qualifications from the, but they will not choose a high court judge from that, from someone who has the, they've got the education, they've got the knowledge. but the activities have not been done over a period of time with maturity. Therefore, that qualification lacking, they will never be selected for, you know, some of the higher positions that other lawyers will be doing. It's essential. In fact, properly speaking, they're not actually brahmanas. Until you actually if they're not performing the activities of a brahmana and they're performing other activities, then properly speaking, they're not brahmanas. Devotees, you know, Brahma Bhuta Prasanatma. One first comes to the level of Brahman. In that condition, one is able to take up devotional service. If one comes to the transcendental level and does not take up devotional service, the activities, one may say, yes, I've, you know, completely controlled the mind and senses, and, you know, I see that Krishna is the Supreme Personal Godhead. But then they never take up bhakti. So then they're just on that borderline. And the problem there is that, so we see many people, you know, they read the Gita, oh yes, I've understood Gita. Oh yes, the deity in the temple is, you know, but they never come to worship the deity, they don't take up japa, they read the Gita, they put it down, they don't take up devotional service. So then their position is that it's very easy for them to fall back down into the material, under the material modes. So this principle here. So when it's saying, you know, one should perform these ceremonies under the direction of learned acharyas, of course, we are saying that, of course, you know, from Brahma, Kashyapa is under his direction, Kashyapa is giving direction to a deity, and the deity is following Kashyapa. But even just on a practical level in the devotional society, we must recognize devotees who are, in fact, performing a particular activity in a mature way, in a good way. Not that, okay, I've been performing this ceremony in the wrong way for many, many years, you know, therefore, you know, they should be, acharya means they actually perform it properly, very expertly, very nicely. You know, they understand, they have the knowledge, they can show people, they can engage people, and they're professors, you know, they're very expert in what they're doing. Not that I've been doing this, I've been making garlands for 10 years and, you know, usually they all fall off, you know, they're all uneven, you know, the colours don't match, you know, and the size, you know, not like that. Nice garlands for 10 years, getting better and better and better, like that. That's a chariot. Any comments on that? Just, you know, because as I said, I see it to be quite alarmingly almost like a rampant misbehaviour. Does anyone else see that sort of activity? People not recognising another's service, you know, practical service?
I tend to ask questions all the time, more from a perspective of understanding rather than challenging. But some people might think that I'm challenging them, but I'm just trying to understand.
Mm. Yes, yeah. Yeah, well, again, see. Okay, so, you know, the Prabhupada says that the first class person, their mood is to take the fifth class person and make them the first class person. So Prabhupada, when he travelled as a spiritual master, his goal was that anyone who wants to, one day you also become guru. He would say so often, I'm an old man, I may not be here for very long, so then this Sankirtan movement will be in your hands. You know, you definitely, certainly, for instance, say, let's take your garlands. You've been making garlands nicely, and that should be acknowledged. And you would also like that people learn that art of making very nice garlands, you know, for Krishna. certainly, you know, you wouldn't want that people learn enough to take over the service and then make poor quality garlands, having pushed you aside. So Prabhupada's inviting. You all become guru, but there's no way, you know, that he would want that you become a guru and spoil everything that I've done by teaching some nonsense. You know. And so he's not going to invite that sort of guru. He wants them, but he's not saying, okay, you want, just because you want to do the service, yes, come on, you come and do it. It's not like that. If you want to be guru, yes, but you still have to qualify by practicing under, you know, satisfying fully those who are engaging you in that service. And then, of course, here it describes it, you know, they're all satisfied. So, you know, the priests, the acharyas, their assistants, the spiritual master, they're all satisfied. So you wouldn't satisfy Prabhupada saying, yes, I've learnt well from you, now, you know, we're going to, you know, make you redundant now, we'll give you a little bit of dakshina and then off you go. You know, that would certainly not satisfy Srila Prabhupada. You know, the girls making their garlands. Yes, you've done very well, you've showed me how to make garlands. Now I'm going to take your service and, you know, here's a little dakshina, a little present, off you go. And, you know, and I doubt that they would feel satisfied to a service they do very nicely. You know, so one has to satisfy. You can't step on someone's head in a very rough, disturbing, offensive way. Remove the service, which is their life and soul. Give them a little, you know, thank you. Yes, you've shown me how to do it. And then say, and say, yes, that's not a way to satisfy. What is it, Nirmala Krishna?
I was just thinking, actually, I'm not going to the Prabhu's name, and I didn't take it offensive, not, my Prabhu did not take it offensive. Mm. Actually, you know, the Prabhu came up to Sri Krishna and said, now you've got second initiation, you get other services, now the dressing of Srila Prabhupada will give to me.
That's, there we go, exactly.
No, but then Sri Krishna felt what he said was logical. He said, I mean, it's not that he trained him, he just said that, look, you're going to get other services, now you're second initiated. Can you give me this service? Sri Krishna said, okay, take it.
Did he want to give up that service, or?
He would have liked to take it, but he said, it's fair enough, others need to also be engaged. When I can, I have now an opportunity to get other services, I should give the service that I have been doing to others, so that, I mean, there's a limited.
Just one minute.
He didn't.
Hi, Krishna. Hello. Yes. Sorry, who was that? Hello. Yes. Can I call you back later?
Yeah.
Yes. Now.
He felt, in fact, I told, see, dressing Srila Prabhupada is something special, whatever you do. And he said that. He said, but yes, I think also, if people who are already doing it, they keep sticking to there, then where is the chance for others? It's fair enough that now I could get, he's not a god,
so,
but he could get.
Sri Krishna was dressing the deities every morning, 7 days a week, 365 days a year. He was dressing Prabhupada.
No, he's dressing Srila Prabhupada upstairs, not even the temple room.
How many days?
He does it, he used to do it two Saturdays.
Two Saturdays?
Two Saturdays.
In a month?
In a month. Two Saturdays in a month.
So why does he have to stop doing that when there's all the other days in the week and all the other days?
Because other people are doing it. He's not asked. Other people, they don't
So the person who trains him up, he should move aside, but not anyone else.
I don't think daddy trained him.
No?
Daddy didn't train him.
Did he? Did no. But he took Brahman. Because he took Brahman.
Now he has taken Brahman.
Because now he's more qualified to serve Prabhupada, he should definitely stop.
So what he said was that, see, look, you can get other services now.
Because he's a Brahman.
Yeah. So can you give me this service so that I have some service to do? That was what he said.
But there's a fallacy. The fallacy in that is that he's just doing 2 days in a month, and he can do other services.
Yes.
And therefore, he is not impeding that other devotee from dressing Prabhupada.
Yeah.
But what he's saying is that you need to move on because you're impeding my opportunities. So two days in a month, and he's giving the indication that that's too much for me to handle. I can't stand the fact that you've got 2 days in a month. You know, where's my opportunity here? You know, it's just you're in my way. The statement, although it seems to be very polite, that's the statement. Now, there are so many other days in a year. Why does, and Krishna is in everyone's heart. We hear this verse after verse. Right? And he's all pervading, and devotional service is unlimited. There's no material. But here, this particular person is in my way. Now, this is a classic example, you know, that somehow you have to, you know, you're in my way for my advancement. You've got 2 days a week. So let's see, there's 365 days in a year, right? There's 52 days in a week. So that's 102 in a week. Times 52, let's say 104 days. There's another 250 days or something, roughly, right, in a year. And somehow this person's in my way. I can't, you know, there's no opportunity for me within the 250 other days. You're in my way because you've got these 2 days a week. It doesn't even make sense. There is no reason why that person should have asked him to actually step aside.
If
you're
on a similar route,
Prabhupada
would have been told that you should never give up a service. Add on more service, but don't stop doing it.
Look.
Sri Krishna felt that, yes, it's logical. I should not let others also. Let others also get an opportunity. He felt that. He didn't want to give it up. He said, no, I don't want to give up
proper, but
he's asking that way.
I feel. Yeah, so that devotee is saying, you're in the way of my opportunities. You step aside. And then Sri Krishna's thinking, yes, you know, service to Krishna is very limited. I have to step aside. You know, these 250 other days are useless to this devotee.
Probably you should wait till you get another service and then you can give up the service. Because right now, we are deprived of that service and he might not have got the alternative service as well. So if you get an alternative Brahminical service, then, not that I'm saying relinquish,
yeah,
but at least you have a chance you can sort of, you know. But now you lose this one and also the other one too, because Brahminical life, no, there's a big queue. It's not easy.
Now previously, right, so this is what I was saying previously. In this chapter, we were supposed to worship Krishna and the altar. The water, the fire, the sun. So, we gave that example. On the altar, we're doing the Abhishek. Devotees thinking, I would like to, you know, cleanse the Lord, do bathing, like that. Prabhupada specifically says in his lectures that the person who is washing the deity and the person who is washing the floor in the temple, they're on the same absolute track. There is no difference in those services. Right? Now, I see that sometimes there can be 10, 15 brahmanas. There's all sorts of little messes on the floor which can be tidied up at any stage. But they all want to, you know, worship the deity as if somehow they're missing out. But in fact, Krishna would accept equally that devotee. He says, look, in fact, he'd accept it more. That, you know, there's a real mess here. No one's doing it. I can just make it nice and easy for these devotees. And this is what it means to be a simple devotee. You know, a simple devotee is just humble. You know, I don't necessarily have to be seen doing what appears to be an important service. So someone's worshipping Prabhupada. That appears to be really important. But I can go into that room anytime I want with a little bit of water and a cloth, and I can dust around Prabhupada's altar and the table, put a nice flower there, and I'll get the same benefit. Exactly the same benefit as that person who's worshipping Prabhupada. There's no difference at all. And how many, you can go out to Prabhupada's room, any time during the day it's empty. I don't see a line of brahmanas from Prabhupada's door all the way up the street. Oh, we got no service, we're all waiting there to get in and clean that floor. And they say, oh, you know, Sri Krishna, there's nothing to do. Step out, step aside, you're in my way. There's nothing for me to do. So then my question is, you know, if someone cannot see what is devotional service, then how are they qualified to actually take over someone's service who can see what is devotional service? So a devotee is there nicely serving Prabhupada, and someone comes along who doesn't even know what service to Prabhupada is. They get a whole material conception. Oh, unless I touch that form there, there's no other service in this universe. They've got a complete... Someone's nicely serving Prabhupada, and then someone who doesn't know what service to Prabhupada is says, now you move over, I'm going to start washing. Unless there is bhakti, you know, that service is not accepted. In other words, someone thinking, it is more important for me to be seen, you know, worshipping this form of Prabhupada, that is an ulterior motive. That's not a simple devotee. A simple devotee with bhakti would think, anything I can do for Prabhupada, anything, I would consider myself most fortunate. I know that if I do it with love for Prabhupada, just anything I could do, he will accept it equally. It's on, you know, I would do anything, and there's so much I can do. That person has bhakti, that service is accepted. You can wash the deity of Prabhupada all day long without that bhakti, and it doesn't have a lot of effect. Except that a lot of people look at you, and you know, you get to the reputation, oh, I'm the person who I do Prabhupada service so many days a week. You know? I'm that devotee. That's my position. So this, you know, this is what I'm saying, that you know, people are stepping on other people's heads. You know, acharya means they understand the service and they're doing the service. Not that they're just doing the service, or not that they just understand. It's both. Acharya means they understand the service, they do the work. As a child. And we're not talking about they have to be, you know, his divine grace or, you know, Maharaj. Any devotee who becomes mature and who is following in the footsteps of the Acharya with the proper understanding and the proper behaviour, they're representing the Acharya. Prabhupada says we may not be pure devotees, but if we follow exactly what the pure devotees, their instructions, we're as good as the pure. We're not Acharya. But if we follow exactly what the Acharya's mood and activities are, we're as good as, because we're doing what they say. So, you know, therefore the activity, just the activity without the understanding, is not wanted. They have to do under the Acharya. And the understanding without putting into practice, that's good, but it's also, it's lacking. What you want is to follow the persons who have the correct understanding and the behaviour. That's, you want to get trained up in any service under such persons, whatever it is. Now, what I see happening is that, you know, people just want to be seen doing the service that to them appears to be more important, even though the understanding of bhakti is not there. Yeah, I want to be serving Prabhupada intimately. That means, you know, this devotee been serving Prabhupada, so now I'll move it and I'll wash it. You know, so that's all nonsense. And there's a lot of that. Stepping on heads. No idea. Is it? So, you know, there's a lot of that that goes on. But it's not our line. Yeah.
Just one question. So we see that there are so many things that can go wrong. But what should be the attitude of the person who is in that situation, who is facing the others who are stepping on them? What is his? What should be his attitude at that point, and what can he do to?
You know, Bhakti Siddhanta and Prabhupada addresses, Bhakti Siddhanta would say, you know, you may think that who is this big monkey sitting up on this, you know, like this. But, you know, humility means this, that I have no desire for respect. You may criticize me as much as you like, and I will accept that. If, you know, that, yes, I have no qualification to do this, but I'm following the Acharya and doing exactly what the Acharya would like. If I allow this other person who I can see does not follow the Acharya, then the service will not be done properly. Therefore, they may criticize me for doing it, but I will not allow someone to do what the Acharya doesn't want done. So that's humility. You criticize anyone, you know, who is this person thinks they're a big, you know, devotee that, you know, they should be doing this service. You can criticize that person, you know, if that happens to be, you know, us in that position. We would accept that criticism happily. Yeah, criticize all you want. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta, he sat on that asana because he was going to preach what is Krishna consciousness, not some Mayavadi, not some Sahaja philosophy. Prabhupada sat, he went all over the world because no one else was going to do it. No one else practically could do it. So they can criticize, oh, Bhaktivedanta is doing this, Bhaktivedanta. That's okay. I'll accept those criticisms. As a humble devotee, you can criticize you like, that is my humility, that I'll accept all the criticism in the world, but if I don't do this service, it won't be done. Krishna consciousness will not go from town to town. So a devotee will accept that criticism and make sure the service is done properly. Oh, who are you? You should, you know. That's humility. if someone lacks that humility, they may not want to be criticized. That, okay, let someone else do the service and let them do it the wrong way. I know they're going to do it the wrong way. You know. But out of humility, I don't want to be seen, you know, I don't want to be criticized. I want to be seen as having faults or to be seen as being puffed up. So to keep my good reputation, I will let anyone come and do this service and do it, you know, in a substandard. All right, so I just want to see, where are we in this? I think we're almost, I'll just read these last couple of verses, right? So, One should satisfy the spiritual master and assistant priest by giving them cloth, ornaments, cows, and some monetary contribution. And by distributing prasad, one should satisfy everyone assembled, including even the lowest men, the chandalas, eaters of dog flesh. One should distribute Vishnu prasad to everyone, including the poor man, the blind man. You know, not thinking, oh, the blind man won't even notice if we don't give him some. No, give the blind man some, the non-devotee and the non-brahmana, knowing that Lord Vishnu is very pleased when everyone is sumptuously fed with Vishnu prasad. The performer of yajna should then take prasad with his friends and relatives. So don't just try to serve the important people. You know, they do. And then the poor guest who's just, smelly guest who wandered into the temple, no one wants to look after. You look after that person. You get as much mercy from Krishna as serving all the so-called important people. Every day from Pratipat to Triodasi, one should continue the ceremony to the accompaniment of dancing and singing, the beating of a drum, the chanting of prayers and all auspicious mantras and recitation of Srimad Bhagavatam. In this way, one should worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This is a religious ritualistic ceremony known as Payabrata, by which one may worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead. I received this information from Brahma, my grandfather, and now have described it to you in all details. O most fortunate lady, establishing your mind in a good spirit, execute this process of Payabrata and thus worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Keshava, who is inexhaustible. This Payabrata is also known as Sarva Yajna. In other words, by performing this sacrifice, one can perform all other sacrifices automatically. This is also acknowledged to be the best of all ritualistic ceremonies. O gentle lady, it is the essence of all austerities, and it is the process of giving charity and pleasing the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This is the best process for pleasing the transcendental Supreme Personality of Godhead, known as Adoksaja. So one who is beyond our limitations to approach. It is the best of all regulative principles, the best austerity, the best process of giving charity, and the best process of sacrifice. Therefore, my dear gentle lady, follow this ritualistic vow, strictly observing the regulative principles. By this process, the Supreme Person will very soon be pleased with you and will satisfy all your desires. So, next week when we meet, we'll just discuss the couple of purports at the end. And then we'll also summarise, some of the aspects of what we read in more terms of the Garbhadhan Samskara, which is it's also part of that. So we'll have a little bit more of a general conversation and just a little introduction by going over those last few verses in more detail. And we'll do that next time we come. So further discussion in general. So if you have any questions, on that, or comments, we'll see you next week. So next week, no festivals or anything. So, no? Okay, see you then. It'll be the 30th. Okay. Hare Krishna. Yeah, when I was in New Zealand, I was doing this, doing a lot of university programs and, distributing plates of prasadam to the uni students, and then, of course, you'd preach to them. And I then was asked to do a different, they asked me to look after the BBT, which was a big suicide, plus I was doing Sankirtan and I was a Sankirtan leader, so I literally had to put that service aside. And they said that they brought this brahmachari who was going to take over the service. Now I knew this brahmachari and he was a very chauvinistic person, so amongst other things. Yeah, nice person, but he had very heavy attitude towards women and children and anyone who wasn't strictly following the four regulative principles and practically living in the ashram. So for this person to put him into the uni, because they would think, oh, we'll just get someone else. Like sometimes management does that. Anyone can just serve out some plates, they're just uni students, who really cares? And I was thinking, oh my God, please, no, don't. This will be a catastrophe. To put such a person in amongst these units, you've got women's libbers, you've got the gay rights, you've got, you know, this, you've got that. And this person just has, you know, one attitude towards you're all in Maya, you know, it's all nonsense, you know, you chant Hare Krishna, you know, dogs, hogs, camels and asses. I was thinking, please, don't throw this person. I begged them for about 2 months. Oh, no, we've got no one else. And finally, that, you know, because I had to stop that service, but I didn't. I would not let this person do it. You know, he was a godbrother of mine, and, you know, considered like a peer. I was a grihasa, he was a brahmachari, but I would not let him do it. And they finally relented and got someone else who actually, you know, I thought was good, who used to be a uni student himself. But, you know, it's not that, you know, that attitude that, okay, I'll move over and someone else can then take up, you know. If they're going to do a substandard, we're not into that, you know. Especially if the people who probably should guide them are no longer there to guide them. They're just literally winging it. That's... Okay, if someone's substandard, but okay, you feel that, all right, I can guide this person. I can make sure that they give up this sort of nonsense, harsh attitude. You know, that's okay, maybe, possible. But to just throw them in there, no, you shouldn't do that. Hare Krishna. And it's one of the problems having a lot of devotees in a big temple. You have so much manpower, you think, oh, someone, you know... Everyone's replaceable, and you've got 10 men waiting in the, you know, in the doorway to come and fill that service. That's a bad attitude. You know. It doesn't matter how many people, you have thousands of people coming to the temple, it doesn't matter. We're not going to let anyone just go up and, you know, worship Prabhupada, cook, make garlands, whatever like that, give classes. You know. Everything should be done by the person who is, you know, doing, you know, able to do it in the best way, because they're guided by the acharyas up the line, bound for it. So Prabhupada ki jai.